He used to cover Sporting. He used to cover the Chiefs. Now he covers everything. Okay, we get it. He's the columnist for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, only on the program.
Hour number two of the program begins right now. Sam McDowell, brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know that you can walk right in? That's right, right now, you can walk right into the University of Kansas Health System. Their walk-in clinic was located at 435 and all in OP. It's diagonal from the Topgolf, right across the street from China Mission South. Ages 5 and up, walk-in hours, they're 8A to 7P, Monday through Friday. So did you play a little soccer match? Here, Nate was whining about being picked last or something for the media game this morning. We see him come hobbling
Anderson
in here.
Did Anderson get picked last for the current one last week?
No, Nate was saying it was him.
Oh, it was him? Oh, wow.
It was like, I don't know, two guys lying Bummer. About who was last.
No, there's actually audio of Anderson being the Mr. Irrelevant.
Oh, really? You can get any orthopedic or sports injury, sprains, strains, fractures, dislocations, joint injuries. University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly, walk right in. I mentioned the Spikers, about 30 minutes in and out, the entire process, x-rays, everything. Found out that Mrs. Spiker, her foot was broken, took about 30, 35 minutes, and they were in and out. No appointment, just walked right in. Do it right now, 435. And all, we welcome Sam McDowell here to the program. Sam, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Already seen you once today.
Yeah, I know. Here we are, back together again.
In a whole new city.
Let's start with what was, I mean, out of the entire day, the entire practice at training camp, one play got more reaction.
Absolutely.
Than anything else. What was your reaction when Todd Lebo refused to give the football to the kids and threw it all the way down the hill back to the kicking crew and was just met with a chorus of boos in the media tent, on the hill with the kids and the fans? I mean, have you ever seen a more selfish act than what Todd Lebo did today?
I have not. I mean, I've known Todd for a while, so it's not, I wouldn't say it's out of character, but it was still surprising just to see it in person. To wrestle the ball away from kids, and then he literally had to throw it over the kids to get it back to where he was going. Yeah. And, you know, the only excuse for it would be if you had some sort of, like, great arm that we all just had to see your pass. It was not, that was not the case. He just wanted to throw a football. I mean, he could literally go to the store and pick up a ball and just throw it around if he wanted to, but instead he decided to swipe the kids of, like, if any of those kids had the opportunity to grab that ball and throw it back, like, they'd be talking about it for
lifetime
years.
Yeah.
For it's a
memory.
Lifetime memory that he took away from
lifetime
these kids.
Lifetime for a memory.
I think I told him that, all jokes aside, that was a really terrible act.
Yeah.
That he had.
He was getting grief, and Sam goes, no, Todd, all jokes aside, that was awful.
That was
a horrible,
nice little switcheroo
horrible
there.
Action on your part.
And to his credit, he's like, yeah.
And what made it even more
he won't
special?
Even try to defend it.
Well, what made it even more special for these kids was Justin Reed
was
kicking
the one who
field
kicked
goals.
It. Yeah, even
so
better
like,
memory.
Oh, we had a safety kicking it, and I could have had it. I could have thrown the ball back, but this kind of chubby, balding, middle-aged turd threw this, you know, wobbling duck down the hill to the other side. I don't even know who this guy was.
There's no need for an ing after the word bald when discussing Todd Lebo.
You know, the process is complete, you're saying?
I'm balding.
Ed.
Yeah. He's balded.
Balded. Balded Todd Lebo. So, yeah.
It really was unbelievable.
Chorus of booze.
Like, even for Todd, that was incredible. In fact, you know, I often try to describe, like, people are like, hey, what's your issue with Todd? And now I feel like I have, like, a lead story. Like, I would lead my story with this. You should have seen this one time at training camp.
It isn't just
robbed,
a general feeling.
He robbed everybody, all these kids, of the chance to throw a football back and said, uh-uh, kids, this is my turn. Step aside.
Oftentimes, I have people ask me, hey, what's your problem with Todd? A quote from Sam McDowell today.
Fantastic.
All right. So yes, Lebo's an ass. We can confirm that. You got any big takeaway from the game? How much? What are you fiddling with there?
Just a water bottle.
Okay. A little too tricky for you handling that top.
It's a squirt top.
Flip. Oh, those can be. Quite the Rubik's Cube. Any big takeaway from the game?
I wouldn't
get
say,
your full attention over here on the show.
Yeah, I wouldn't say big takeaway. I thought that the most telling play was, and couch everything by saying it's preseason, right? I'm sure all day you've been saying, "Hey, we know it's just a preseason game."
No, we're calling it life or death.
Okay. Well, maybe I should come up with a different takeaway then. But there was a third down play between Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Patrick Mahomes that, you know, the only pass that MVS caught on the day that they had to ad-lib on the play. And it was a specific type of ad-lib from MVS that I thought was indicative of that the two have a relationship that, you know, is probably come from the fact that they worked out in the summer together, that they've been at training camp. And it's some of the stuff that we've wondered for a while as far as, is this relationship going to work between Patrick Mahomes and the new wide receivers? It's not just about their talent. It's about their connection with him. And so, the play was he runs a hook over the middle from the slot. He's supposed to be the number one option. The play wasn't open because the Bears were in a zone. And a guy latched onto him that was in that zone. And so when Mahomes rolled right, you would think usually receiver would also roll along with him, but he rolled the opposite way because he noticed that it was the slight hesitation from the defender to follow Patrick Mahomes on that. Moved into the open space, and it continued to drive. And the interesting thing was I asked him about it in the locker room after the game, and he said that he's been picking Travis Kelce's ear about how do you have the second nature with Patrick Mahomes. Not, you know, of course he's trying to learn the playbook. He's trying to learn Andy Reid, trying to learn where Patrick Mahomes likes to throw the football, all those preferences, but he's been picking Kelce's brain on just, you seem to have the second nature with Patrick Mahomes. Tell me more about that. And I just thought that was one play in a preseason game. I get it. But it did show that, you know, there could be something to work with as far as just the connection that those two have.
I would agree. And, you know, Valdes-Scantling's athleticism, you can see it pops pretty good. And his hands were, I mean, on that one, he was fairly well covered. And Mahomes kind of had to hit just the right spot, and Valdes-Scantling had to snatch it. And so I thought all around it showed, you know, how they can be effective together. And it wasn't just him. You know, we heard that he was the only guy to run faster than Tyreek Hill last year. Well, this wasn't just a straight go route, which is a lot of times kind of what the Packers just used him at.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we've long wondered, you know, are the Chiefs going to use him differently? And they've kind of publicized that they are going to use him differently. We don't know exactly how. And that's what's probably, you know, there's less of a clue in preseason because I think you try guys just like a pitcher in spring training might try and work with some stuff. So I don't know that necessarily means that that's the way they're going to use him. I will say in training camp, he did have a few days stretch where he was dropping passes. And that was the knock on him coming out of college, even though he finished last year without a drop. And so you saw statistically on the field there was some improvement with him in that area. But I still think that's probably the top question mark I have about him going into the season.
Yeah. The rushing attack, your thoughts on the running of the Chiefs offense?
You know, I think going into the season, I thought that they should run the ball more. I'm not sure that I feel extremely confident, and I don't think they have a number one running back. I think they have really good depth there. I don't think they have, you know, just a top flight guy who – I think it's great that Michael Burton's an option, for example, on third and one. I don't think it's great that it's your best option on third and one. So I think they have the offensive line to do it, but I don't know that they have the running back that's just going to immediately hit the hole – you know, when presented with that opportunity on third and short.
Yeah, the Spinderella fullback dive, staple of the Andy Reid short yardage offense.
Wasn't it surprising he showed it in a preseason game? It almost makes me wonder that he's got something like set up because that play was shown so many times last year. And Jesse Newell for us did a story on it, but Michael Burton was 8 for 8 when given the ball on third down last year. And
was he really?
First
All right, that was the stat you were quoting. So it's just the Anthony Sherman 42% success rate that's burnt into my brain. It actually was a lot more effective with Michael Burton.
100% effective last year, yeah. So I think
on one yard to go.
Yeah, but 8 for 8 though.
But what about on 2 yards to go?
I'm not sure how often they gave it to him on 2+. I think almost every one of his carries was on the 1+ on third downs anyway. But the fact that they showed it in preseason kind of makes me think that he has a wrinkle based on that play. and he sort of is trying to remind the rest of the league, hey, this is our go-to play on third and short.
What did you think of the second and one run that got stuffed to set up third and one?
I thought that it could have been a first down.
And what if what?
Are you talking about the Clyde Edwards-Helaire play right before it?
Yeah, it got absolutely stuffed. It was a RPO.
Yeah,
because he had receivers down the field. What did you?
You asked this question to Creed Humphrey, I think it was, maybe like a month or so ago on a Zoom, and I thought he gave you the politically correct answer, but not actually the correct answer. It was awful.
I mean, to be honest with you, as far as what actually happens on an RPO, he kind of said, "Oh no, it's
you blocked the same." Is kind of what he told you.
Yeah,
and it's not the case.
Not true.
And I do think that the Chiefs are going to have to get. I think they're going to have to call more just actual run plays if they want to run the ball and not have it as an RPO.
What I thought was, okay, they are going to do that, but what they did all last year was RPO, RPO, RPO. So I'm hoping that here's all the stuff you've already seen on tape that we did last year. And then when we get to the regular season, okay, now here's the power runs. That's what I'm hoping.
I do think there's a decent chance.
I do too. I think Andy Reid's obviously very good. His off season and build up to the regular season, I think he's one of the best that's ever lived at doing that. So I expect absolutely for him to show different things. But how many times do they run the ball all day today in practice?
Well, they have specific just run drill segments,
right? Yeah. They do, but I'm wondering. Because, you know, he always talks about, well, you know, it takes timing to get the passing down and all that. But, I mean, I think there is an element. Like, and I offered up today. I said, look, we're working on certain things today. And maybe what they were working on was the passing game. And tomorrow we're going to see a whole bunch of runs. They were working on the passing game. And when it was the defense's preference, they wanted to work on pass defense. And so all we saw was throwing the ball today. But I do think there's and listen, I would much rather have a guy not run the ball enough than run the ball too much.
Absolutely.
So I will live with Andy Reid throwing it all over the place all the time, every time. I'm fine with it. But I do think at some point, I'm wondering if he's reached the point where he's like, listen, if you really want to be good at just running the ball, it takes way too much time in practice and it's not worth it. It's not a lost leader because you don't get the returns. It's just a lost cause because the return off the success that we get, I don't get to the things we need to work on that actually pay the bills, and that's throwing the ball. And if he's just calculated, well, we have this amount of time, and that's not enough time to become proficient at the run. So we'll be good enough, and we will pay the bills with the pass. I wonder if that's where he's at, mindset-wise.
Yeah, that goes a little bit into the was it more that had the quote about Peyton Manning when somebody had asked him, like, why don't you use the backups?
Because if 18 goes down, we're effed.
Yeah.
And we don't practice effed.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of resemblance between that.
Yeah.
But I will say they've had days where all they've done is run the ball.
They have?
Yeah, where the whole drill is just run. That's pretty much the day is, you know, you're working on your running offense.
And that was that one day, and now they're done with it?
I have not been. I think I've missed like 3 days of practice or so, but I've seen two of those days in camp.
Okay. I mean, I do think that's got to be part of it.
I think another piece of it is
Don't practice them. Like the old Steelers, like the Steeler trap. Like you might not be old enough to remember the 70s Steelers. I mean, that took timing. Like you couldn't just be like, okay, we're going to trap lock, and anyone who – It's basically an X block to make it as easy as you fire over and get another guy. But one guy has to go first, and then the other guy has to come around. And basically you're getting, you know, defenders to take steps upfield, and you use their own momentum to push them on by, and it creates a big hole. That's kind of a ballet that took some time. Pretty much everybody's zone blocks now because I don't think they want to invest the time in what it takes to actually be good at different, you know, and they combination block and everything with zone blocks and everything. But that kind of like, let's really like Bill Snyder, I'm pretty sure they spent some real time on their run game. And, you know, I just think it's where the game has gone. But
let's bring back the wing T.
Probably not.
I'd watch it in a game.
Would you?
I'd watch it in practice for sure.
Do you know how long as a different topic, but you've given me a chance.
You've given me a interject a different topic.
You've given me
beach volleyball.
You hated our topic so much that you're going to change. You're going to completely change the subject.
You've given me a chance to vent here as a guy who had to deal with a garbage college football team for a long time. All I had to listen, all I listened to throughout, from my buddies in college at the college radio station, going, we need to hire a guy that runs a wing T or a triple option. That's the only way to get KU football good.
No,
so
that's wrong. But
I covered some wing T in high school. It was actually pretty entertaining.
Well, if it's run well, if it's practiced well,
you can fool some guys in high school. Yeah.
So then let's talk about this. Chad Henne's still the backup quarterback. Let's take a break because I don't want to get behind. But let's talk about, should we really be?
Let's get to the meat of it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, listen, you have Patrick Mahomes. So a first world problem, right? First world problem. And he doesn't suck. He doesn't. And he made a real nice throw. He overthrew somebody else. He looked like a backup quarterback and might even be one of the better ones. But is that really where they should be at this point? We'll talk about that with Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. He's with us. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System at 435. You can walk right in and get diagnosed. Whatever ailment you might have when it comes to the sports injuries, go see him today. Walk-in clinic available 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 435 and Null.
End of the hour answer. Vinny Pasquantino named today AL Player of the Week. Before him, who was the last Royal rookie to win that award? Who was the previous Royal rookie to win that award? There have been, all time, there have been five.
To win a Royals rookie to win AL Player of the Week?
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Beltran.
Nope. The award goes back to 1973.
Angel Barroa.
Nope.
Those are rookie of the years.
Yep. Hamlin.
Not the most recent. He is one of the five.
Mike Avilas.
Mike Avilas.
Nailed it.
In 2008. So Vinny in 22.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, McDowell. What do you think about that?
Mike Avilas in 08. Bob Hamlin, 94. The other two, Kevin Seitzer in 87.
The Seitzer dog, as we called him, from the right field GA.
In 1978, Clint Hurdle.
Sports Illustrated's Clint
cover
Hurdle,
guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then never to accomplish anything else. Did he win another award after that?
I don't believe so.
I don't
he
think
showed
so.
Showed a little
either.
Bit of promise in 80. People thought he was going to break out, and it just did not happen for him.
Just did not
a
happen.
Better manager than a player.
Mike Avilas. The Royals thought that they had found for $1,000 as a college senior. And the way he burst onto the scene, we have our Barry Larkin. Here he is. Turns out he came up just short. Just short. We were playing for a little Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Always a wise choice. You can order at joeskc.com. Pick it up on your way home. Send it anywhere in the country. If you're in sales, I think that's a great way to make your client feel loved. Send him some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. And, of course, Kansas City Barbecue store is there for you at 119th and Strangline. Had my first, we cooked frozen pizza in the Traeger. Mwah. Fantastic.
Really?
Strong. It's really good. Give it a little smoky flavor to it. Huh. Very good. Yes.
Crispy on the bottom?
Uh-huh. Well, I took it off. Yeah. Started with a little cardboard box that comes under it and then put it on there. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, feel free. Now, it kind of functions more like an oven than just like your straight grill with the fire. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but good times. Good times. Very, very happy returns.
By the way, I looked up some numbers from last year.
Okay.
Third and two, specifically, plays. Chiefs had 25 plays.
So you're done with the Joes and the Kansas City.
I didn't know
store?
If you were moving
no,
on.
No, I
didn't.
Sure. I was. Go ahead.
25 plays. There were 16 pass plays. Chiefs got 15 first downs out of that.
Third and two, they had how many passing?
16.
And 15 times it resulted in a first.
Yep, only one did it not. They had one penalty, which gave them a first down. They had two scrambles.
So that would really be, in my opinion, 18 pass plays called with 17 first downs.
Which left five design runs by running backs, two by Derek Gore, three by Darrell Williams. They had one first down in that bunch.
So all of Burton's then were the...
Yeah.
The 8-for-8 was all third and ones. I thought that was the case.
1 yard to go.
King of the 1 yard run. That's what Burton is.
Well,
do you like the nickname Brat? I don't understand Burton Brat. Like when we just had the sausage, didn't that just a no-brainer? That is
perfect.
That he be the Brat.
That's all right.
Really? But what do you? What?
I don't have anything for him. No.
No.
No. I just like to criticize other people's suggestions. Yeah.
I hear where you're coming from. Chad Henne. Like, is it time? Like the wily veteran to hold the youngster's hand. We've evolved. We're beyond that now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're beyond that.
Again, first world problem to be critiquing the backup quarterback. My thing is I would like to see a second and a third string quarterback on the roster and active, because I would like the third string quarterback to be a runner. And I would like them, to, as we sit and talk about third and one and fourth and one and goal line, I would like the run pass. And if you don't want to do it at goal line, fine, because Mahomes throwing the ball is a threat. Great. But whenever, if you're not going to quarterback sneak with Patrick Mahomes, which is the single easiest way, particularly with a man who is, quote, like a refrigerator, to quote Patrick Mahomes talking about Creed Humphrey right in front of him. If you're not going to quarterback sneak with Patrick Mahomes, then dedicate a spot on the roster to a quarterback that can run and can hand off and can read an option. If whatever, you can design a little package for short yardage. And let's get moving. So you can have any, that's fine. But I want somebody, if they're not going to quarterback sneak with Patrick Mahomes because of what was a freak occurrence with the kneecap, then they need to carry somebody who will.
I'm trying to think of how many guys. I mean, Jacoby Brissett fits that, I think. But how many other guys would, like, how many guys are out there in the league?
Cam Newton.
Okay. I think Cam Newton would be a little bit prima donna-ish to bring into the locker room just for that.
Yeah, I would agree.
So,
but you said who fits that bill?
Yeah, no.
Colin Kaepernick?
Kaepernick's an interesting one for sure. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, they just got this. They just got their quarterback sneak guy hurt last Saturday in Chicago.
The belldozer.
Yeah. I still, you know, say that you called that option play in the playoff game. Was that the playoff game?
Was it
the Steelers game, right?
Yeah.
Was it the Steelers playoff game?
I think so.
You called the option play and
yeah. I phoned down to Mandy and said, Coach.
Yeah, you're in the headset.
Let's go. He should be able to run the play. Because he screwed it up doesn't mean it wouldn't be a good play if executed properly. It means he's probably not the right guy.
Yeah, part of it's gotta know your personality.
Well, No doubt.
There has to be somebody though that fits that bill that would be worthwhile. But I am trying to. I don't disagree with the concept at all.
Well, because even if you're like, well, but you know, he's taking up a roster spot. Like, if the Chiefs hadn't had Marcus Kemp for the last 3 years, are we saying that they
Bouchel,
win 8 games?
Bouchel did too for a while, because remember last year the Cardinals tried to poach him.
Yeah,
and so they had to add him to the 53-man roster. So he was on the roster, and I can't remember how many weeks, but he was on the roster for a good chunk of the season last year. And, man, I mean, if we're into the weeds on the backup quarterback, we're really into the weeds on the third-string guy.
It's not really a discussion about second- and third-string quarterbacks.
It's about the guy you want to put on the field.
No, yeah. it's a discussion about getting 1 yard.
Yeah, sure.
And what is the most effective way to do it? And we just pointed out, they ran it 5 times and were successful once.
Once on 3rd and 2.
So then on 3rd and 2, right? So stop doing that, okay? It doesn't work.
But it's got to be in your playbook.
Or find better.
Yeah, because it's got to be in your playbook. I mean, it's got to be an option. It's got to be something the defense has to account for.
Well, you run it on first. If you run it on one to go, it's not you don't have to present a whole different formation. Present the same thing. But they're not good at it.
It is interesting, though, that we presented the numbers on 3rd and 1, and 3rd and 2 look markedly different running the ball. So, there is a pretty significant difference in the success rate, obviously, on those two plays, which means, you know, 2 yards is – the difference between 1 and 2 is a lot of difference between in 7 and 8.
Would you call a quarterback sneak with Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah. Well,
is that yes? You would, or
I don't know. I haven't really thought through that question. I agree with
you,
but I think it's
need?
I think it's a freak. Well, because part of the information we don't have is exactly why that injury occurred, and I think that has to play in your thinking. The information you got from the trainers, as far as hey, his knee is constructed this way. And, oh, by the way, after the injury, here's how it's constructed now.
He's got really soft kneecap tissue, yeah, and so he's going to be susceptible to this all the time.
I mean, we all heard that. And that, I mean, when you talk to doctors, like, that's not a thing.
Right.
But is there something different? Like, that's just what I'm saying. There's some information there that we leave out. But let's say he's completely back to full health, and he's no more susceptible to that injury than literally anybody
else. Would you run a quarterback
sneak? Yeah, in that case, I would run a quarterback
sneak.
You got
no problem with exposing him.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, if somebody wanted...
Would you?
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to say to me, look, 6'5 and a half Tom Brady stays on top and up and over the fray, so he's not taking headshots from diving linebackers. He surfs on top of the pile, and Mahomes is shorter, and so he gets caught up in the pile more often. I would listen to that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's another really good piece of information we don't have. Is how good is he at doing?
Well, it's the only theory I've come up with as to why it was anything, why he would be more susceptible to being hurt with a quarterback sneak than Tom Brady, who's 46 years old and still doing it all the time.
Yeah,
when he's not taking 10 days off to, you know, do whatever he's doing.
You mentioned Creed Humphrey, but, you know, it's the interior three that has to get put. And that's where the Chiefs are strongest on their offensive line. It's not just Creed Humphrey. I mean, it's Tooney and Trey Smith there, too. Chiefs tend to get a lot of push on the interior.
Yeah. Why not, particularly on third down, I don't understand why you just don't run straight offense and then know you're going for it on fourth. Like, I'm amazed at how dynamic Andy Reid is at everything, and then when he gets to one to go or two to go, he makes Gunther Cunningham look like a freewheeling offensive genius.
I don't know. We just talked about this Burton thing. That was something he completely sort of put in the playbook last year. I mean, he had different variations.
Oh, it's just a fullback dive.
It's a trap mostly, but he had different variations of it that he ran in the playoffs too that worked as well.
Okay, I just don't think it's playbook since third grade for everybody who's ever.
I don't think it's quite as bad as you're making it out to be. I agree that the Chiefs should be more successful on third and short, given how great their offense is. But I just don't think it's quite as bad as you're making it.
Well, I just think it opens up the opportunity for them to be much more dynamic. If you can knock out 2 yards at a time whenever you want, you can go for two all the time, and you can really put pressure on the opposition.
It's true.
But so I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to figure out. Listen, can we find a guy and can we design a package of plays that make us almost unstoppable for 2 yards? And then now you've really got something. Anytime we got a third and two or a fourth and two, we're going for it. And we know we feel good. We're knocking this out at 75%, and we're going for two on every one. We're not messing around with one, and we're gonna knock that out at 67%. So we're overwhelmingly to the good. Like, I think it's worthwhile to find. You know, to me, it's like right now. What is the dumbest thing in sports?
The dumbest thing in all of sports.
The dumbest thing that from a technique or an application where there's an obvious better solution. There are two that I would listen to, but there's one that I think is most obvious. There's obviously a better way to do it, but it's not being done by professional athletics, this professional sport, and it's not just absolutely carpet bombed for not doing it.
I would say teams... If we're talking about the NFL, I would say
the NFL.
Punting way too often would be up on my list.
This is way dumber.
The dumbest thing in sports. I mean,
you've sat here long enough, you've probably heard me say it.
Not bunting against the shift?
Well, that's the one that I would also listen. Yes. How they still, how we've been shifting for 5 or 6 years and guys still come up just barreling right into the shift.
Now I'm intrigued.
Is ridiculous. That's the second dumbest. That is just horrifically awful, okay? Unless you want to say bunting so hard and then never, ever bunt ever again. Either teach them to bunt against the shift or we never, ever bunt again because bunting against big league pitchers is hard. I'll listen to either one. I will not listen to selectively using both, okay? That's second dumbest. This is even dumber in sports.
The mid-range jumper,
Which has lost its flavor, but you've arrived at the sport. It is jackasses that shoot 42 Andre Drummond and 46% and 47% from the free throw line who won't granny it up there.
Oh,
okay. I defy you to shoot less than, say, 65% grannying up free throws. You can't miss. And even just the flip of it, you get a second chance. It hits the backboard and goes in. It's freaking hard to miss granny style. And yet they won't do it because it doesn't look cool.
I've never tried it. Have you?
Yes. It's so much easier.
What do you shoot? See that
better than I did for a regular free throw.
That gives me two Same. Pieces of information, though. It means you're not a great shot.
I'm not. No. I was never given good instruction.
But you are talking about
a hot
guys,
mess.
You are talking about guys who are not good shots, so we're at least apples to apples. Apples to apples on the comparison.
So my point is, it's the same thing. Like, this is like, there's an obvious, like, the ability to clip off 2 yards at a 67% success rate is gigantically valuable. And so it's worth the effort to try to do it, yet no one does.
There has to be, like, it's not as dumb as the bunt enigma. There has to be no other radio host in America that is able to pull off a comparison between the granny shot from free throw line and a third and two in the NFL.
That's why he's the best.
Just sitting back.
Yep. His words.
Sitting back in his chair.
Yeah. You know? I mean, are you disputing anything I've said?
No, but I do think there's one.
Welcome to the party.
I think there's one extra layer to it, which is I would
on the granny shot or the 2 yards.
The 2 yards. Okay. I have no extra layers on the granny shot. I just would return the conversation to the running backs. I think it's indicative of the running backs in your room. If you don't have a running back behind this offensive line, the push that they get up front on the interior.
So you think the running backs blow? It's not that maybe.
I don't think their strength is to just run straight. I don't think their strength is to get from the handoff to the line of scrimmage as quickly as absolutely possible and just take what's immediately there.
That's why I come back to the quarterback, because if Andy Reid said, listen, I can find some plow horse that can, you know, probably be better at that, but it's not worth the roster spot because I don't do it enough, I'd be like, well.
Well, I'd be curious because I think
he would argue that, no, it's not the running backs, it's the offensive line. But I think then the counterpoint would be, what's most important is protecting 15. And so I don't think they practice it. I think that's one of them. So then keep doing what you're practicing. Throw the ball.
Well, let's go back to Curtis, if you still have that page up.
By the way, how did we get to where we're pissed about Andy Reid not converting and we're not even playing regular season football?
You're talking about the backup running or the backup quarterback. Yeah. But let's go back to the page about conversions on third and two, because one thing that putting in one of these Colin Kaepernick, Jacoby Brissett types would be, and heck, Tim Tebow used to fit this bill as well. One of the things about putting that type is you do eliminate, I think, the element of the back end, you know, being able to really
have an explosive play on that, right?
So I'm curious, Curtis, like the passes that they converted, how many of them were, you know, we're going all third and two, so two gets the first down. How many of them are 3-4 yards, and are there any, like,
how many of them are 16,
explosive
18?
Plays that resulted in, you know, plays that, you know, a guy like Stern's talking about will convert?
Let's make a prediction on what we think it's going to say.
I don't think there's going to be that many, actually.
No, I don't think there's going to be any big ones, because I think Andy Reid actually becomes conservative at that point. And I think everybody can – that's the one time you can walk everybody up to the line of scrimmage – because he's not. They do just, like, lean for the tape of where that first down marker is. And very rarely does, you know, you think, like, oh, Mahomes, a swashbuckling gunslinger. He didn't drop back and then, like, boom, here's a 45-yarder over your head. You know, we don't see that.
You're talking about third and two.
Yeah. Right.
Of those, I think it was 16 completions or 15 completions for Mahomes, 8 of them were more than 10 yards, but the longest was 32. The longest gain was 32
yards. Amount,
yeah, but was it a 3-yard throw that a missed tackle ran?
Well, the 32 says, in the play description, it says complete deep left. There was a 30-yarder to Kelsey that says short middle.
Okay.
But everything else was under 20 yards.
I wonder if that short middle one might have been.
How many are under 10?
That was against the Raiders.
Okay.
How many are under 10?
Under 10, One, two, three.
Well, that would leave
four,
like five or six.
Six, seven, eight.
Okay.
Does this particular play happen too often for it to be an option just to give it to a big fatty like Chris Jones? And just roll forward?
There's a lot of legs to get at with Chris Jones.
Just somebody like him.
Yeah, right? But that's what I'm telling you. Is like, why don't we see 6'5" running backs? Because you shoot the backfield, it's harder for them to get up and over and around or stop and start. You know, they tend to, you know, Randy Moss wasn't a running back. He was a wideout. And that's what they'll – the same reason why outside linebackers there for a while were trending to where they were getting to be 6'6", like Andre Bruce. And they, you know, everybody just cuts them. And they're like, it's hard for those guys to get up and over cut blocks and everything. It's the same thing with the running backs. You know, that's why 5'10"-ish is kind of – the standard height for running backs these days is they quicker steps, quicker stop start and
you bring
change.
A guy down by the legs. I mean,
yeah, and
shorter legs in that position.
Well, the taller guy's harder to get his pads and take on the hit. And if you get into his legs, you're going to bring him down. So, Dontari Poe at 6'3", that's why he was back there and Chris Jones wasn't.
Great idea, Adam.
Yeah, super. Yeah, other than being completely not thought
other than,
out.
Other than being completely
was the play, Mrs.
wrong.
Lincoln.
A dismal failure. You did great. Are you – so let me come back to my original premise. Like, they ought to be able to – like, let's
find
start,
somebody.
Yeah, that maybe some upside. Like we've been waiting for how Andy Reid develops quarterbacks and trades them out. Like, when is that coming back around?
I think those are two different things, even though they are related. Because I am surprised. I thought if there was a year they were going to take a flyer on a quarterback.
By the way, I'm not angry and hating on the first.
I know.
I just want to go back for anyone who joined late. First world problem.
Right.
First
right.
world problem here.
But we're I thought if there was a year nits. They might take a flyer on a backup quarterback, it would have been the year they had. You know, they ended up with 10 picks. They entered with, 12, though, right? And by the way, the quarterbacks went pretty late. I just thought if there was a year they might take a chance on trying to develop somebody, it might have been this year.
You know what I haven't seen, like, what I think is part of the equation? There, bad failure quarterbacks, you know, highly thought of, keep getting starting jobs in other, just on worse teams. Right? Like Marcus Mariota. I would love to see Marcus Mariota in the hands of Andy Reid.
Yeah, he's a really good one for what we're talking about.
But he's starting for the Falcons.
Yeah, that is surprising. But he was a backup last year, though. I mean,
I was kind of surprised.
Those guys that are kind of fringe guys, though, I assume that part of their equation is, could I eventually win this job? Is there a chance that I could play well and play my way into this job? Let's say the starter gets hurt. If I play well for two games, they're going to take me out. If you play well in Kansas City for two games and Patrick Mahomes is hurt, he's still coming back as the starter.
I am surprised that Colin Kaepernick has not been a Chief. And my assumption is that either, one, somebody beyond Andy Reid has said no, which would only be Clark Hunt, you know, the ownership has decided we're just not going down that road. Nobody's signing this guy, right? Or two, Colin Kaepernick has decided that being a martyr will do more for his cause than getting in and knocking the rust off for a year, because Mike Vicks will tell you it took him a full year to knock the rust off. Knock the rust off for a year and then hold a clipboard maybe for 3 years. What does that serve? That if he never plays again, it's better. He makes a better statement for the cause that he's trying to draw attention to, and so he really isn't trying to get a job. Like I don't know. It to me, one of those two things has to be it. Because if you're Andy Reid and you will bring Mike Vick in with the firestorm that he was under, I would think that you would bring in. Or politics is a bigger thing with Andy Reid than we all realize. I guess that's it. Can we think of another option?
No.
It just doesn't make sense to me how the guy who went and got Mike Vick did not go and get Colin Kaepernick to be a backup. And again, the easy one might be Kaepernick is, I'm not backing up and I don't even really want to play. I just want to make it look like you guys won't sign me. Maybe that's the plan for his, you know, it's the greater good. But it just does not make sense to me that Andy Reid would not sign that guy.
I do think it would have leaked out at some point if a team had actually made a serious offer to Colin Kaepernick. I mean, it'd obviously be in the NFL's best interest that information was out there. Hey, somebody has offered this guy a deal. So
the only information we had is that the Seahawks offered him a backup job when they had Russell Wilson. That's the closest thing to a rumor on Colin Kaepernick going anywhere we've had.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a – and I not to dispute the list of possibilities that are part of your list, but I don't think that him having interest and just refusing that interest is probably the most likely one.
Let's take a break. More with Sam McDowell here in the program from the Kansas City Star. We talk we'll see if we get into a little Royals baseball. We got a little more Chiefs we want to get to. But we'll talk some Royals baseball as we continue as well with the columnist for the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. You know, you can walk right in right now, 435 and all. If you got that knee barking at you, you know, hip, ankle, not sure if you got a fractured wrist from playing a little weekend softball, find out right now, 435 and all. You can walk right in. It's the University of Kansas Health System. So, is it all fixed with the Royals?
I think they're in a good direction, which is the question that matters most, right? Are you headed in the right direction? I think they're headed in the right direction.
Are you excited to see Brad Keller's next start?
I actually think there's a really interesting question about Brad Keller, which is what kind of fit would he be at the back end of a bullpen? And are the Royals willing to do that next year?
Don't you think at some point, like, you should lose your job? Like, everyone's like, well, you know, you're missing the point. They don't have anybody better. But they can't be much worse. And so just making the statement that we're not doing this anymore is a bit of a, you know, like the sense of entitlement that I think was there when 10 guys aren't going to Toronto is somewhat perpetuated by the fact that you never lose your spot in this rotation, ever. Who lost a spot in the rotation?
I assume you mean for a veteran guy, because we saw Bubich lose his spot early in the year.
Yes.
Singer kind of lost it because he was assumed guy coming out of spring training and didn't get it. But I assume you mean veteran.
Yeah.
Veteran. I mean, guys,
but also you're 5 years of service time into this and still trying to develop the man.
Same pitcher he was when he showed up, basically.
As a starter.
Well, that's why I said the back end of the bullpen, because first of all, we've seen him do it, but you remember they had another failed starter just like 5 years ago.
Mm, yeah. You talk about Wade Davis.
Well, even Ian Kennedy, a guy that
Ian Kennedy, Luke Chamber.
Ian Kennedy got paid as a reliever.
Well, it's, yeah,
as a closer.
Yes, there is ample evidence that moving back to the bullpen is something that starters can do.
Yeah,
let's get to it. It's not like the bullpen's lights out either.
Yeah, I do think it makes most sense to make that transition in the offseason, though, to come in with that plan.
I like Brad Keller, but I have now decided.
All right, what school has the longest active streak of being ranked in the AP preseason football poll? Brought to you by Good Sense.